Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
You know, we're just about to roll up into the real, real spring thing. But this is when the winter flowers make their march across the horizon. We talked last week about daffodils. We've talked about hellebores. We've got trees beginning to bloom. And this is part of my favorite world, in that if you start on our coast and travel each week going up to Memphis, you can see the trees starting over and over and over. You can actually see the flowers beginning. So it's everything from flowering magnolias, of course, which a lot of folks have seen. You'll see the star magnolia in my back garden today in the group of photographs that have come in. But it's also time for red buds. And I haven't had a chance to talk to you about Cirsus canadensis in a very long time. It's a native tree. I hope you have one. But it is probably the most romantic tree in my life. My mother and dad loved that tree. They loved the heart-shaped leaves that it has, but they particularly love the really glassy-looking flowers that are blooming right now in many places. And as you go through the next few weeks, they'll be blooming all the way up the Natchez Trace and into Tennessee. Beautiful, beautiful trees. There's some fancy hybrids, fancy cultivated ones, that even have beautiful purple leaves. Those are magnificent, too. But the little purple flowers and the gray stems are some of the most beautiful things. It's just a tree that can absolutely make you smile any day of the year. But right now, when it's in bloom, it's a beauty. Such a beauty. How many languages do you think there are in the world? Lance, do you happen to know this factoid?
Oh, there has to be thousands, right?
You'd be correct. And the ones that we still speak are more than 7,000.
Yeah, I mean, I would think, I was thinking now, 3 to 4,000, but yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
now.
The dialects that are, yeah.
Obviously, some are vulnerable. Some, there's the, we lose languages every year because there's nobody left to speak them. I always think about the code talkers in World War II. If you don't happen to know that story, we were able to break through a lot of very serious impediments to our progress in that war because we had the Navajo code talkers, and no one else knew what they were saying except them. And that helped us because they worked for us. They were there, you know, they're Americans. They're in the military at that time. And those are the kinds of languages, you know. I'll confess, back in the when, we used to try to speak Latin to each other because no one else could understand us.
I studied Latin, yeah.
It's not a very good language to speak,
though. It's a toughie. Didn't roll off the tongue too well.
Not exactly. But there's always the ones that have fewer than 1,000 speakers are considered vulnerable, just in the same way that an animal would be endangered. That really accounts for nearly half of those 7,000. So you're in your 3,500, 4,000 spoken languages, you're about right. Okay. That's incredible. It's National Language Day, or Worldwide Language Day, depending on whose calendar you look at. I don't know. I don't think I know enough languages. If there's that many, I should certainly know a few more, don't you think? Come on.
Yeah, I need to pick up a few more. It doesn't seem the easiest thing. You know, I studied Latin for, what, 2 or 3 years growing up in high school. Great base for learning a Romantic language, which I lived in Mexico a bit and learned Spanish, and that was not the easiest thing. I mean, to be honest.
I mean, no, I understand.
Yeah, you know, it's formula. You've got to really study. Yes. It's like music a little bit.
Yes.
I guess if you grow up and that is your language, it's so easy. But when you're trying to figure it out and learn syntax and all the way to put things together, you know you're missing so much when you're trying to communicate.
I can read, for instance, German scientific stuff better than I can ever hope to speak German, you know, just because I've had to do that for school and stuff along the way. But there's some languages that just don't seem to fall out of my mouth very easily, and German is one of them.
It is a beautiful language, honestly, as I read more about just basic commands to my dog, and I've always been fascinated with German because it's such a halting, and it seems to have such there's such gravitas when it's spoken, you know. And so
it's a very affirmative language.
Yeah. Japanese is like that, it seems.
Yes. One of the things that I get distressed with, oh, y'all, There's people in a couple of generations that are not going to like this. There are people who make every language sound less important than it is because they take everything up at the end.
Huh?
You see, they speak like that. And you like could be this? Saying, you could be saying Webster's International Dictionary, and it wouldn't sound like Webster's Dictionary, you know. And so I have a problem with that. German speakers don't do that. German speakers are very affirmative. You know, that may be negative, but it's a very affirmative stance, whichever way it goes. It's interesting. You know what Schnecken are?
No, but it sounds like a word I need to know.
You need to know that word. Schnecken, because we hear a lot about it here on the Garden Mama Show. Schnecken is German for snails.
Okay.
And snail is where sticky buns come from. Today is National Sticky Bun Day. These were in the 17th century Schnecken. And, of course, as you might imagine, they came to the United States in Pennsylvania with the settlers there. Mm-hmm. So it's a delicious thing. But one more little point. Somebody's going to tell somebody this over dinner, and they're going to argue about it. But I'm telling you the truth. The difference between sticky buns and cinnamon rolls is quite serious. Cinnamon rolls have frosting on them. Sticky buns are baked with their sweet topping at the bottom of the pan, and they are flipped over. That's why they're different.
I got you. There's some little tricks of the trade.
And now
here.
We're hungry.
We'll be here all day. You really started me out well there.
See, you're going to be here all day looking for sticky buns. Paula's in. She's going to go. Oh, she's going to go out to Rivers in Brandon today. Good place to visit, to look around. Surprise, surprise. Take your truck. You're going to want stuff when you get there. I saw some photos from there this week. They're just beautiful. Always a great place to go. Fun stuff. I have always the question is, why do we celebrate anything on any particular date? And there's no good reason for these things. But apparently, the 21st of February has always been Sticky Bun Day everywhere you go. So somebody will find the reason and tell us about that. If we go to Venezuela today, we could go and get the golfiado, which is their version. It has cheese inside that sticky part on the top.
Yeah, the sticky buns are the ones that has like the pecans or the nuts involved, right?
Certainly can. Yeah. Certainly can, yes.
I was just, it started starting
still
to dawn
on me
rounded,
what we're dealing with. It's still a rounded thing.
Right.
But instead of having the frosting on the top like a cinnamon roll would, and it often does have nuts, it often also has things like cardamom and stuff in it. Okay. Has other flavors to it.
So I'm not a big raisin fan. I remember sometime that was, I remember there, at one point in my life, coming across the sticky buns that had the pecans, I guess, and raisin in it. I'm not a big raisin fan. I'd love the, you know, anything without it, though. I mean, like every other ingredient in these is, it's right down my alley.
Give me golden raisins all day long.
Oh, man, I just can't eat them. I don't know what it is. I love a grape.
Oh, spring is springing in Vaughn. Thank you, Greg. That's beautiful. Just gorgeous. See, it's the tree parade. And we really are, one of the things that we don't think about enough, everybody thinks about crepe myrtles. Well, that's a beautiful tree, but it blooms in the summer. So let's have some stuff that brings us through the year. You know, that's part of the reason for these winter trees being part of my palette, is I want there to be something in bloom at least every couple of weeks all the way through. And then, of course, the crepe myrtles take over pretty much for the summer, so that's no problem. I think we're looking at pictures from Rivers right now. I'd be surprised if that's not where these are from. Thank you, Mark. He sent them in to us today. One of the big questions that comes around at this time of the year is, well, what if I plant and then it gets cold again? Well, that really depends on what you're planting. And when you're planting trees and shrubs, you don't have to worry about that. If you do decide that you're going to put in earlier vegetables, or if you're growing vegetables and then find that it's literally turning freezing cold overnight, I apologize, this is going to be what it's like today. I'm sorry. The question is always, what did you cover them up with? And don't over-fertilize. Somebody said to me this week, you can't just cover them up. You have to be growing them in that really put that point of view that says you're going to grow them as lean as possible and still get them to grow so that you don't have to over-fertilize and therefore they're not as vulnerable to the cold weather. Well, that's true. And I agreed with that, so I'm bringing it to you today. I think it's important for us to all understand when we go looking for things to do at this point in the year, it is a transition time. So we've got to take a look at what we can do today and also the ways that we may want to protect things for another date. For example, sometimes when we shop, we want to go ahead and buy stuff that we're not really ready to put either out in the ground or maybe even into containers outdoors. And I think that that's the first place where we have to think about protecting some plants. Oh, those are beautiful. I'm so sorry, y'all. I've tried to control this, and it's just not going to happen today.
Well, it's the weather. I mean, we've got these fronts.
It is.
Running into each other.
One runs into the next one, and I just, this morning I woke up coughing.
Well, this next week should be pretty decent as far as getting out and enjoying gardening and the yards. There'll be a little cold snap, as you know, for a couple of days, but between the rain today, it should we shouldn't see much more precipitation until around the 26th as a front comes in from the northwest. So it gives you about 4 or 5 good days of getting out and enjoying, hopefully, and hopefully it'll blow through some of this that we've had. Because I know quite a few people have been a little congested.
See, me and my tea this morning.
Exactly. You got to double hand that tea just to make sure.
I'm sorry. It's comforting enough. I don't ever do that. Today it's necessary.
One of those days. But it has been rough. The weather has been all over the place. And do you think that that's challenged the plants, or is that really
kind of? It certainly does. You will see things, for example, quite a few roses that got pruned a couple of weeks ago have already begun to grow, but a really wet patch followed by a couple of very cold nights, they may get set back. They're not going to get killed, but they may have to start over again. I worry about things like the forsythias, the quinces. Some of those flowers are already starting to bud up and open up, and they will be damaged in some cases, but not every case. Some of them will be just go ahead and bloom anyway. But if they are, don't worry about the plant. I know you'll miss the flowers, but it's not necessarily going to hurt the plant itself. Same thing's true of things like plums. If your plum tree goes ahead and blooms or is blooming now, in some cases they already are, this is the point where you have to realize that it isn't, you may or may not get pollination and fruit every single year. One of the things that happens with plums, of course, is that the one will bloom, and then the other one will bloom that's its pollinator, but it may not be that they may or may not be able to get to pollinate each other if there's a whole lot of rain. Rain is one of the things that does slow down our ability for the not only for the bees to get out, but just for the pollen to shed itself. So you have to think about those pieces of the puzzle. I'm wondering about Greg's blueberries. We've been talking about them for a couple of weeks.
One point I was going to ask here to have you expand upon, well, with this warmth that we've had, with all the rain that we've had, we've also had the freezing temps that now followed by the warmth again. We'll hear in, say, the Delta and other areas of Mississippi through the weekend, it'll get down to around 27 degrees tonight and lows of around 24 degrees. Not tonight, I mean Sunday night and Monday night. I'm sorry, a 27 Sunday and a 24 Monday. Is there anything that you can do right now to prep for what that little snap? It's just a snap, but you've had all this water and all this to go
really,
along with it.
Really, for example, if you just planted potatoes last week and you're they're in a bed or they're in a big box, depending on how you grow yours, you don't want them to sit in water. So if it's extremely wet and then you think that water's going to freeze on them, you might want to just cover it up. Throw some hay out there. Go put, a tarp on the top of it. It's the same sort of thing just for that day or two, simply because you don't want those actual potatoes themselves to get so wet that they rot. So that's one piece of it. Things that you've planted that have been established in your lawn, you may lose flowers, you may lose a couple of, brand new leaves, but you're not going to lose that much. A couple of nights isn't going to hurt most of the plants that we grow, I'm happy to tell you.
Well, that's good
news.
Now,
on the other hand, if you've already dragged out plants that you thought, if you're pushing the, we're so terrible. Gardeners push everything. We want it to get cool sooner. We want it to get hot sooner. We want it to be sunny when it's raining. We want it to, we're never satisfied. So one of the pieces of the puzzle is always, what did you do last? If you just fertilized everything and it's just poured down rain, you don't need to worry about it because nothing's going to be overdone in the cold. The fertilizer's already washed out into the next week. You know, you've already taken care of that problem. On the other hand, if you're looking to fertilize something like, say, for example, you want to hit the ryegrass one more time, right after it rains is a perfect time to do that, despite whatever temperature it might be. So it really does depend on what we're growing, but also how we want it to grow. Yep, Paula's got some pollen on her windshield from the flowers blooming. And that's a very good sign, my friend. You may or may not agree with that, but it's a very good sign. That's the next set of sneezing and coughing that comes along is when all the pollen gets coated onto everything. But it is true. We're starting to see more and more trees begin to bloom, and that's really what I think this whole parade is about in February going into very early March. I want to see it. I love it, and I appreciate very much that you all like it, too. That's really terrific. All the way to Vaughn today. That's great.
We need to have, like, a pollen pomade. I mean, find something to do with all this yeller.
Well, you would think we could make something out of it.
Yeah, I mean,
that we could at least, you know, make a beautiful natural dye out of it that we could. You know,
well, yeah, I read or was studying a little bit about the Plains Indians, and Custer did a little deep dive, and he was rumored to use cinnamon in his pomade. You know, so he always had a little cinnominy smell to it. Pollen could be a good anti-effect.
May I just say that having not known him, but having seen pictures of him, he may have been attempting to not be quite so pale. He may have been trying to put a little color in his hair, his skin, or something, because cinnamon will help with that. And I know that we're much more conscious of things nowadays, like over amounts of sun. But you think about those guys, the reason that those pictures are so weathered is because their skin was coming apart. You know,
they were out in it all the time.
They were there all the time.
Is there anything that you can use like that as far as naturally grown things, cinnamon, tea tree oil, or what is the best stuff for the skin?
Aloe vera.
I love my aloe vera.
All day long.
They seem to be the best medicine.
Well, it has the least invasive properties and also the most healing. So for a balance, it does better for you. It really does. Now stick around. I'm going to try not to cough. I appreciate your allowing me to do so. Thanks again for the sunflowers to Mr. K. We'll be right back.
I'm Sean Tindall, Commissioner of the Mississippi Department of Public Safety. Since 2021, Mississippi has seen a 25% reduction in fatalities involving crashes with commercial motor vehicles. Many of those crashes could have been avoided. DPS, through its MHP's Motor Carrier Unit and the Commercial Transportation Enforcement Division, is partnering with Big Rig Truckers to conduct safety checks across our state for the Trooper and Trucker Safety Initiative. The Department of Public Safety and the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration are working together to keep our highways safe for everyone. Thank you, and drive safely.
Nowadays, customers are searching online for the services they need.
Are they looking at your business?
Having a mobile-friendly website can really help you win new customers. Let SuperTalk Mississippi Media create a great-looking and very affordable website for your business. Plus, studies suggest that a well-written radio ad can lead to a 20% lift in traffic to your website. Just call SuperTalk Mississippi Media today at 601-991-2305 or go to stmmdigital.com.
My doctor's office.
Nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Oven in the morning, out in the garden, get you a rifle. Hey, don't get a heart.
You're just trying to make me crazy.
I love this song. Absolutely.
I know you do. Welcome in, my friends. Oh, my goodness. It's just not time yet. We just wish, we wish, we wish. And I'm going to confess something, y'all. I bought an heirloom imported tomato the other day.
Like just the tomato or the plant?
Just the tomato.
Oh, I love those things. Oh, my God.
It was good.
Aren't they so beautiful?
I was mad. They're really pretty. Really, really. You know, I like dark red. It was really pretty. But I was mad that it tasted so good.
Oh, I know, because then you don't have another one.
Exactly.
That's the problem.
Exactly.
So anyone out there that is cultivating heirloom tomatoes, if you want to give away some.
In your greenhouse, let us know.
We'll be your best PR campaign.
That's right. We'll be nice to you. We won't tell anybody.
No, I'll tell everybody.
Just in Starkville with beautiful, beautiful Linton roses. That's gorgeous. Well, it's just prime time. So marvelous. Prime time for them. That's great. Well, that's funny. I'm reading your previous texts, Jeff. That's great. Blueberries yesterday. They did get juiced up this week, Greg tells us. We've been watching these things, but the buds are still really tight. They haven't opened yet in Vaughn. That's what we're crossing our fingers for. Oh, my goodness. This weekly report on the blueberry report has just been so important because we all wait to see whether we're going to get frozen or not. And if they haven't opened up yet, you're in good shape.
Well, that's the birds are definitely sitting around waiting.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're just waiting
for lunch.
Oh, yeah,
they're watching their watches. Yeah. They're absolutely.
We're not the only ones watching them.
No, that's very true. That's very, very true.
After a good cold winter, of course they are. They're sitting back going, those babies are going to be so
delicious.
That's right.
We're going to be here when they make. You know, there's no question about that. This is a great one. Does anybody else grow huckleberries? That's one of those things, you know, you may or may not know that huckleberries are very closely related to blueberries, but they are native and they're not popular. They're delicious. They're wonderful. And people who grow them treasure them, like this person who has texted in today and asking about, because they're one of the bushes is almost in full bloom. So should I spray the flowers to try and help them hold their petals on when the freezing weather comes? Yes, that's the same thing you would do for strawberries. It was the same thing you would do if you were in South Florida with citrus trying to bloom. You would go ahead and put that water on them. And yes, you have to do it both nights because it'll dissolve overnight. But that's a great idea. It's also, they got two plants, and one gets the sun all day, the other one not so much, and it has not bloomed, so it's budded up. So I would probably spray that one too. Y'all are so sweet, wishing me that I feel better. I hope I feel better too. Very soon. Very, very soon. This is, this is one of those things, y'all. There's so many factoids. I always try to have something that if you go to the dinner table or you go out to a party with some people, find yourself sitting around, as we say, you know, having a little tootin' common ramen with some buddies, you got something to talk about. Here's today's question. Who's closer related to human beings, pangolins or armadillos? And are they related to each other? The answer to that one's no, even though they both have scales. Fascinating. Why don't we know more about pangolins? Because they've almost been hunted to extinction, that's why. All that crazy stuff, I'm not going to say crazy, because I don't know. It could turn out to be true. But the idea that I'm going to harvest pangolin scales, and that's going to be some sort of medicinal thing for me, has not been proven. And I don't even think it's been proven in Eastern medicine, much less Western medicine.
Yeah, that's kind of like, you know, tiger paw and things like that.
What, you know.
When you look at this thing, though, you can see it has a magical look and quality.
Oh, they're amazing. Because the scales are keratin, you know, it's basically like, it's like your fingernails on steroids, but it's all over their body. So even though the armadillo has a similar kind of scale, they're not related. The armadillos are the ones actually related to the anteaters.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? Pangolins are more closely related to cats and dogs. Isn't that crazy? That's just wonderful.
I love that. Thanks for bringing that up because it's been a long time.
They're so cool looking.
Oh, they are. I totally forgot about them, too. And you would think there's something like in the South Pacific, but it's an African animal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they're just wild looking. If you don't know what a pangolin is, go check it out.
The folks of Real Science, it is Pangolin Day, so you'll probably see it on any feed that you go on to today. But the question is always, how come we got that? And how come it's a property called coevolution. In other words, they developed in one place and other things developed that are related to them, but they needed protection, obviously more than some of the others that may have developed a strong tooth or a strong piece of keratin somewhere in them, but they didn't get the scales. So that's pretty cool. What's Anna up to today?
Well,
how's it going?
You've been talking about so many things, but vegetable gardens. I can't start mine because I have a great big lump of pine tree right across it.
Yeah. By the way, for those of you who might just be tuning in, Anna is our Oxford reporter, and she's been keeping us, she keeps us up to date on what's going on in Oxford with the master gardeners and with her garden, but lately it's been the report from the just devastation up there.
Well, you talked about language, and you had studied language. Well, as a kid, I studied naturally English, and we had to study French, mm-hmm. and then it was Latin. And I had to choose between Latin or domestic science, and my mother said, Latin's the way to go. And I said, no. And she said, yes, and that's what I never took, cooking, much to my chagrin.
Turned out okay, though.
Well, it kind of helps a little bit, because Latin is, you know, like the father or mother of the languages in the
yes.
in Europe.
Yes.
But then you're talking about planting. It's going to be a long time before we plant here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's how it feels.
Well, they just got to get the stuff off the ground.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And my front is coming along. It's not great, but in the back, the neighbor's tree behind us was a big tree. It was one of these ones with the berries that I don't like to eat, but they make a mess. And and it fell on my side.
Yeah.
And you have a strange law here that if it falls on your property, it's yours.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when the guys were cutting it down, I was working, cutting my stuff. And I could hear them, and I walked over to them, and I was, oh, if you're going to leave that on my property, you've got another thing coming, Buster. And they dragged it off.
I would love to have a video of that.
Well,
we call that getting up on your high horse. It's an understandable moment of take that with you, you know.
Well, he didn't get it all, but they got the machines out and they dragged it off.
Good.
But it was a big tree. But then he comes over to me with his cell phone, and he keeps pointing at his cell phone. So I start, you know, look, and it's a proposal. And then he presses a button, and it talks to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it tells me that if I hire him, he will do it independently and take care of all my cut trees and everything else for $1,000. And I well, you know, he's very clever at doing this, because he knew damn well I couldn't speak Spanish. But I said, no, I'm waiting for the insurance adjuster.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And just left it at that. And then he toddles off, you know. I thought,
we do love a good translator, though. I'll tell you. It's very helpful.
Yeah. I never realized that he, you know, well, I mean, he was young. He was a lot smarter than I was, so that was the other one.
I'll tell you where I use it specifically. When I go shopping in an international market, you know, I think of Mr. Chin's up on the frontage road in Jackson, but they're all over the place. There's things I can't read. I don't know what they're saying, but I can put the translator on there and find out what it is I'm looking at. It's great.
Yeah. And finally, the last thing you mentioned was cooking. One thing I look forward to at the end of this period in Christianity is hot cross buns.
Ah, yes. See, now that's it's another treat that you, if you don't know about them, you don't know how delightful it is. But hot cross buns are just marvelous. It's a yeasted.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's a puff pastry, but I know it's a yeasted one.
My husband bakes bread, and he's learned how to make hot cross buns. I think that's wonderful.
I think you should keep him.
So
thanks, Anna.
I think that don't forget my presentation coming up next Wednesday.
Yes,
at the library.
Y'all
that's
all
the
get up there
library,
and go see
not
her.
The bar. Okay.
Well, I suppose they are both real libraries, but we want the one with the books as opposed to the one with the bar.
Yes, yes, we've got two libraries, one with and one without books.
So, remind us what you're speaking about. I know, but I want everybody to hear.
A Wicked Plant, and it's poisonous, not so poisonous, addictive, and invasive. And I must say, there are a lot more plants than I have got in my presentation. Because
that's great. We can look forward to part two next year.
Well, I should be able to do a second one, but the problem is, it's just so much time, and those explorers brought back all these plants, and they didn't know what they were all about.
That's very true.
And they're all over Mississippi.
We have a lot of foundlings, as it were, things that got planted and nobody really knew what they were put, you know. See, it all sounded like a good idea at the time.
Well,
you know, kudzu will prevent erosion. You know, kudzu will prevent erosion is my classic on that. Well, yeah, that's true.
Well, you get a goat.
Exactly.
Okay.
Several goats.
Yeah, many goats. They like kudzu. So.
You are correct. We're able to grow everything. And as a result, when people bring us things, sometimes we wish they hadn't. You're exactly right. You're exactly right.
Yeah. I'm trying to clear off the things over my plants. I've got hydrangeas, which I've rescued, and hellebores, which are doing just great.
Good.
I just try to get all the scrabble and everything else off those, because I want to enjoy them, even though the rest of the yard looks like a hot mess.
Well, we really appreciate your willingness to continue sharing with us, because there's so many people that have been going through this same situation.
Eventually
every gardener. Yeah, eventually every gardener has to encounter this. But I appreciate y'all's resilience and look forward to hearing more and more about it as time goes by.
Oh,
thank you.
Yeah,
Nina.
Well, I've just lost two. There you are. That's my report from Oxford, Mississippi.
Thank you, ma'am. Have a great program next week. Y'all go see Anna at the library on Wednesday. That'll be fun.
Yeah, it's been a mess up there.
And the thing about it is that it's one of those situations, it doesn't matter how fast you try to recover, you can only recover as fast as the whole place can. You know,
right.
In other words, it's still going to rain, it's still going to freeze, it's still going to, you know, it just keeps piling on to them. And that makes it difficult, too.
Well, and you've got so much green space there. Mm-hmm. It was so greatly affected. The parks, if you've been to Oxford, it's on a big hill, and then you've got lots of green and trees and overhang. And I mean, the pictures I saw after it happened were just like devastation. And knowing
you couldn't
that it
tell
was,
where it was,
yeah, exactly.
You couldn't see it. You couldn't know more landmarks.
And that kind of went all around to that whole area, not just Oxford. Oxford got a lot of press.
No, but that's the center of it. But that whole space,
I know folks are still dealing with the aftermath of that. Hopefully there'll be a lot of folks that need firewood and be willing to buy it, and you know, they'll find other uses for a lot of this debris over time. But as Anna was saying, they're still working hard in the parks, just getting limbs and things
just trying
cleaned
to pick
up,
it all
you know?
Up. I'm reminded that, you know, the blueberries in the big fields after Katrina, with all of the debris that was left from that, have actually become productive, and that's a very wonderful situation. But it takes years. So when you realize what you're doing, you also have to know that time's on your side, but you're going to have to be patient, you know, more patient than you might want to be to get some of these things to get redone. I really have to say, though, I would love to have seen Anna forcing those folks to take
Wouldn't
the trees
that have
off
been
her
awesome?
Property. She has such a demure presence, you know, and I always feel like I'm a little too loud, so I would love to have heard that. Jackie and Brandon says, what to do about azaleas budding, planted last spring? This will be their first bloom. If they are not showing color, you don't have a problem. You may want to spray them with water if it's going to drip, if it's going to drop rather, you know, 30 or 40 degrees, it won't hurt to do that. If they are showing color, I would throw a bed sheet over them or something. It may or may not help. It's not going to kill the plant, but the flowers may or may not be messed up. That's a good word for it. That's very horticultural. It's a messed up flower.
That's a technical term.
It's a technical term.
I love it. It's professional.
We'll be back. More on pangolins and armadillos, and I want to talk about bonobos today. Plus, we got insects from... Did you know there's only one native insect in Australia? More on that here on the Garden Mama Show.
To another morn, to a town so long ago, where the sweet magnolia blossom, garden fields were white as snow. Catfish was a river hobo, lived and died by the river's bend.
State Treasurer David McRae has returned more unclaimed money and delivered more college and career savings to Mississippians than ever before. He's done it by making the state's education savings programs more flexible, benefiting students and teachers at virtually all schools, private or public, vocational or technical. He's making college and career savings and getting unclaimed money easier than ever. Don't let another day go by without claiming your cash or jumpstarting a career. Treasury.ms.gov.
Here's Sammy the Shovel here to tell you to call before you dig.
A lot of homeowners are working hard to create a loving home. Whether it's expanding that crowded deck, maybe a swimming pool, good times start with these additions. And that's why we respectfully ask you to first call 811 and have your utilities properly marked before you dig. It saves you from injury and expense. It's the law, and it's just the right thing to do. So call 811 before you dig. Remember us for your next project. Just call 811.
Ace Blonde will rock me, mama, and away you feel. Hey, mama, rock me. Oh, rock me, mama, like the wind and the rain. Rock me, mama, like a southbound train. Hey, hey, mama, rock me. Oh, so rock me, mama, like a wagon wheel. Rock me.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. So appreciate him. We were looking at a list of songs with mama in them the other day, and woo-wee, there's a lot. There's some we can't play because, well, mama's a little naughty sometimes, but we have to clip the ones that have clean language, as it were.
That's always a bit of a challenge, too.
It is a bit, and I recognize that that's not the way the world is, but that's how I am. You know, I'm still there, so you may sit with me and hear a profanity or two, but you won't hear it here. If you do, Lance will hit the dump button so that I
hope
don't.
So, yeah. I'll knock over two cups of coffee in the process.
On his way to get me off the air quickly. Interesting comment from Gary and Carrollton that people worry about metal in trees looking for firewood or for lumber from the yard. I'm sure that's true back when people used to put nails into trees to, you know, hang up swings and stuff like that. But trust me, you people don't do that so much anymore, first of all. And secondly, if you're the one cutting the tree down, get the part out that has the metal. You know, if you pay attention to what you're doing, it is a problem.
It can
be an issue.
A lot of folks around here in central Mississippi have taken full advantage of the debris and have gone out with trailers, and I've seen men, young boys, you know, out working and loading up, getting ready for drying out some wood for next season.
The best way to start a barbecue smoker business.
Yes, I mean, I've seen them all over.
You've got mountains of it right now.
You hope that's what we see, is people going, okay,
sure,
I can find use for this, and let's clean this stuff up.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we had one comment, you know, with Gary saying this, it gets to be a mess when you have, you know, so many entities involved in trying to get everything back. And hopefully we'll get to a critical mass here shortly where things will start looking a little bit more normal, you know.
Yeah.
It's a big thing, though. And I, you know, heart and prayers for everybody that was affected. But at the same time, all those that are out there working to get this cleaned up, it's we know what it feels like. I lived through it down here with Katrina. My mom worked in catastrophe on that side of the insurance industry, as she was, had been in the insurance world for 30 plus years, and I learned a lot.
And I'm going to tell you something. If you're an insurance, I've had friends who were insurance adjusters. I've certainly had to work with them over the years. Y'all, those people take a lot. I cannot imagine how tough your mama's hide must be. Because people say stuff they don't even mean to say it. Some of them do. But people are not always kind.
She was, I think her personality coming in, you know, working in the corporate world for so long and being on the customer first mindset,
sure,
getting out into the field as she was a mature professional.
Yeah, but I don't think I don't think the professionals do anything. I think we human beings are just jerks sometimes.
Well, that's what I think. She was real good about the knowing and understanding how mm-hmm. difficult this was
of
for
course.
The insured. And their job then was very simple. Get money into the hands and pockets of mm-hmm. the insured so that they can get some sense of normalcy back.
Well, of course. That's why you buy an insurance policy, so that there'll be help when you need it. I mean, that's, you know, it's not only the law requires it, but it's not only that the law requires it. It's that you realize that you need that help. You're not going to be able to take care of that yourself at the other end of things. There's always another way to look at stuff, and I think that the professional like your mom, who's had the opportunity to see so much, is really the person that you want to talk to. Makes a lot of sense to me.
It's helped her a lot in the profession. She spent a decade roughly or so in real estate, and she's really good at it. And you know, listening to her talk to customers,
her ears are burning right now.
Yeah, well, I hope she's still, you know, taking a nap. She's been real busy, but you know, the thing is listening and learning how you actually talk to folks and how do you relate to people in a situation in which you yourself yeah. are not in and they
yeah,
are. And I've
it.
Learned so
that's
much
it.
from that it's there's a skill to it, and there's also some a great deal of empathy, and not everyone has that, obviously,
that's
or
true.
Has the ability
that's
to express
true.
It. But those that are able to do that in that industry make such a great difference for the people that are being so affected by devastation. And again, I like to I've had some bad adjusters, you know, in my experience. So the good ones do make life a lot easier.
Yeah, we won't talk about the ride bys, but that's a whole other
yeah.
thing entirely.
I had a couple of those. So, yeah.
yeah, we don't talk about those too much. The thing of it is, though, in any service industry, and quite frankly, virtually everything is a service industry in one sense or the other. If you're not aware, you may or may not be a naturally empathetic person, but surely you can look over next door and see that, for example, the tree is laying on their house and it fell out of your yard. Well, yeah, legally that's their tree now. Okay, but if you've got somebody that can come and help, sure, you're going to pitch in and do that, aren't you? I mean, I sincerely hope so.
Well, and it is a little weird. You know, we have the Richard Schwartz Legal Power Hour, and we've had this discussion for a couple of Mondays. It's a great mm-hmm. show. If folks, mm-hmm. if you've ever missed out and you have legal questions, hop in.
Oh,
I
yeah.
love
Mondays.
Being a part of that show. Because
that was so much fun.
Yeah, well, and you get questions like this. Like mm-hmm. Anna was saying, well, mm-hmm. there's some weird laws. You know, it's one of those things with trees. If it's dead and the person's who has the land and the trees on it, if they're notified that that tree's dead, then if
yeah.
it falls on your stuff, they're liable. But if
yeah.
the tree was alive and it was on their land and it falls on yours, that's where it's your
yes.
deal. Because it was
exactly
there was no
right.
notification, the tree was fine, and an act of nature.
I still have copies
better.
Of the letter that yeah. I sent to my neighbor to say, your pine tree is going to fall on my house.
There you go.
And when it does...
That's the,
but you really you have to be aware too. This is one of those things we go back to. That what do you do in your garden every year? You take pictures of it.
That's right. Yeah,
document. You got to take up. You got to know what shape your trees are in, and maybe even what shape your neighbor's trees are in. And if you do that once a year, you don't lose track. You don't get surprised. I think about our calendars. We're talking about the blueberries at Greg's and Vaughn, Greg and Kathy's house in Vaughn. We talk about that. We talk about how we're looking at them every year. We're looking at them all the time to try and make sure that we actually know what's going on. If you can put that down on a calendar, or if you just have photographs with dates on them, then you can go back in next year and go, you know, these things bloomed a week later, or they bloomed a week, so, you know, whatever happened, and you'll know what happened in your garden. It's important for everything. But it's really important for trees. We don't, I'm sorry, y'all, we don't water trees very well. It's pretty much impossible. Luckily, there's 30, 35 inches of rain in the deep south most years, so that takes care of them. But you still have to be aware of how things grow and how they don't sometimes, you know. Well, this is interesting. The white discoloration on the newly planted cuttings. I'm looking at a couple of things here. Yeah, I see a couple of things going on here. The first thing that I'm seeing in these photos When the white crust forms on a clay pot, it tells you that you've used, or whoever had the pot, has used fertilizer, and it has the salts in the fertilizer have come to the surface of the clay. That's not necessarily a bad thing, but it does tell you that the use of synthetic fertilizers that have created that salt is also affecting things inside your container. Okay, so you probably want to clean that pot. Clean it before you use it again, at least. When you have a white material growing on the surface of the soil, like we do in this other photograph, there are a couple of things. First of all, scrape it off, let it dry out, and we'll talk more about it in the next hour. But you got to get that off of there first, okay? So stick around. We got time to go, and now we got something to talk about. This is the Garden Mama Show.
Despite the heat, it'll be all right. And babe, don't you know it's a pity the days can't be like the nights in the summer, in the city, in the summer, in the city. Cool town, meeting in the city, dressed so fine and looking so pretty. Cool cat, looking for a kitty, gonna look in every corner of the city. Till I'm wheezing like a bus stop, running up the stairs, gonna meet you on the rooftop. But tonight it's a different world, go out and find a girl. Come on, come on, and dance all night, just like the heat, it'll be alright. And babe, don't you know it's a pity the days can't be like the night.
Pine Grove Behavioral Health and Addiction Services, located in Hattiesburg, is one of the nation's most comprehensive treatment campuses. Pine Grove provides the highest quality mental health care and addiction treatment for children, adolescents, and adults. Pine Grove offers many levels of care, including inpatient and outpatient treatment for children and adolescents. If you have any questions, please call 1-888-574-HOPE and visit pinegrovetreatment.com.
Planning a home improvement project? Don't let your dream renovation become a nightmare. Before you hire any contractor, remember these three essential steps. Ask to see their current state license, check their insurance coverage, and always get at least three written estimates. Visit msboc.us to verify credentials and review complaints. Your home deserves a licensed professional, because when it comes to construction, cutting corners could cost you everything. Call the Mississippi State Board of Contractors or go to msboc.us to learn more. A message from the Mississippi State Board of Contractors.
Hello, my name is John.
Well, another thing I want to mention here while we're giving some promos,
yeah,
is if you love Garden Mama and you love the Garden Mama Show, she has a basket of swag out there that you got to go check out, you know, especially the coffee as it goes. But, you know, we'll have shirts available again soon.
They're coming along. Yeah. Spring is about to crank up here, y'all. That's just all there is to it. We have to put some sunflowers on those shirts this year, I think.
That'd be good.
We seem to be into that. Thank you for that promote. And frankly, I'm drinking the coffee right now. It's helping my throat, so I've moved from tea. Really good set of questions. The containers, the clay pots were new, and they're crusted with white on the outside of them. Could this possibly be as a result of the packaged moisture control potting? Well, yes, because it's full of fertilizer, and that's what this is. This is the salts that are coming out from that. In that case, I'm going to advise you to water more thoroughly when you water. Water so that water goes all the way through the container and out the bottom of it. When you water, that will help with the salt management. And I'm still going to say I think this thing is staying too damp. So take that surface mess off and let the soil dry out, and let's see what happens after that. That's going to be my next thought. It's very unusual to see things go quite that white on the outside of the clay in a new container. So I do think that that's from the potting soil. I would be surprised if it wasn't, let's face it, because there was no other fertilizer applied. Okay? Okay. Interesting, though. Oh, that's pretty. Peach trees. Yeah, we got everything going on here. Tim's in Oxford. Oh, this is here's a dilemma, y'all. Garden Mama. Advice, as this is a quote, advice as I get ready to fix crepe myrtles that forces outside of this homeowner did after the ice storm without consent. And I'm sure they were trying to clean up, but it is a mess. I'm not sure what to say, except if you can shorten each of these branches and make it a little bit more evened up, the tree will be in better condition. Parts of it are just not there anymore, and obviously they were broken or they were snapped or something. But there was not there was rough pruning, but there was no serious attention to the tree. It was just to get the mess out, is what it looks like they did. The part about without consent is always troubling, because you have an arrangement with your homeowner association or your neighborhood association or anything like that, chances are real good you've signed something that said they can come do this, because that's the way most of those agreements are natured. However, you always have the opportunity to go to the next meeting and make a complaint. So that's about all I can say about that. Tough stuff. I would say prune as little as possible, but do prune, because you're going to want these trees to be rejuvenated, and they're not going to be right now. You've got pieces that'll leaf out and pieces that won't. Now, there's always the point of view in a damaged tree. Just see what happens and wait and prune later. You can certainly do that. But looking at these, I think they need to be shaped up a little bit so that they can begin to grow. Okay. I can't see this video. This is another correspondent today that cut the limbs back and nothing happened. Is it because it's injured from the ice storm? The video is not clear enough for me to see. It's probably me, not the video. But, yes, it could easily be because new growth has just not begun, or because it can't yet. The other thing, of course, is to make sure that the plant itself is not entirely dead. Both of those things. I warned in our previous hour, and I will warn you again, I'm going to cough at some point, and I apologize for that. I've got we call it snork. We don't, it's a cold, it's a whatever it is, but anyway. Oh, they're planting potatoes. My granddaughter and I are planting potatoes right now. Would it be okay to use all-purpose garden soil in the bottom of the container? Yes, absolutely. That's perfect. If you got some leaves and stuff, you can mix that in with it, but you can certainly start it just in that soil. That's great. What fun. We had another picture that from someone today who's starting some as well. That's great. there's people investigating Lance today. Ooh, Linton Roses in Alabama. Hello, Cheryl. Thank you so much for texting in today. When is the best time to move them? That is so difficult. You know, they're going to die back after the flowering season. So when they finish blooming, I would go ahead and prepare where you're going to move them to. And then just as soon as the weather evens out, you don't want to wait till it's too hot. But I would think that sometime in March would be appropriate in your part of Alabama, because it'll be pleasant, but it won't be freezing, and it also won't be warming up too quickly yet. Linton roses are not happy to be moved, so be aware that you need to get them right back at the same level they were growing in the place they're growing now. Sometimes we do have to divide them, or we have the opportunity to divide them, because they make such a big clump. And it's a delight. It's a beautiful, beautiful plant. Another one. That's great. That's great. Such fun. I love that flower. And it is one that I wish that we grew more of. It's so expensive to grow, because it's hard to grow. So when you invest in it, you know you've bought some plants for sure. Oh, this is great. I love when we get I guess it's an update or a report. The flowering maple cutting that we talked about quite a while back in terms of rooting is now blooming, and it is just lovely. You're more than welcome. Thank you for letting me know about that. That's so pretty. I love apricot-y orange flowers, and the abutilon, the flowering maple, really does make a beautiful show. It's just lovely. Some of them are veined, some of them are not. One of the other flowers that's in the parade today, along with daffodils, are snowdrops. The southern snowdrop, there's a northern snowdrop, but it doesn't grow here. They both have the same common name, unfortunately. But these are the ones that you will see. They nod a little bit. They're on a green stem, but their bell-shaped flowers have green dots on each of the petals on the outside. That's how you know that it is the snowdrop. They're one of the very first bulbs that we get to bloom. And no, I don't know where you can buy any. Everybody always wants to purchase those, and I honestly don't know who sells them. Wonderful, wonderful. Lyman's in Monticello planting hot pepper seeds, super hot peppers. That's great. Do I just put the seeds in the potting mixture and water to let germinate, or am I missing something? The only thing that I would do differently, Lyman, is I would water the mix before I put the seeds in. Sometimes the seed starting mixes are a little bit fluffy, and they can be quite dry because the intent is for them to be sterile. So go ahead and water them first and then plant the seeds. But how great. I look forward to another great year of produce from you. That's fun. I have two or three friends that have already started tomatoes. One in Memphis. I said you're gonna have to really take care. You can't plant those things for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. But I recognize how fast things go once it gets going. So that's why we're so eager to get them started. That makes sense to me. We try to get going a little bit sooner, but don't overlook your lettuces and things like that, you know. This is really important. This is a good one. The daylilies put out green last week. Yep, and the warm spells got killed back. And they've put out green again. Is it okay? No, don't worry about it. They sound like they're fine. They sound like they're fine. If you have any concerns about it, certainly cover them up. But the chances are really good that they're going to be just fine. Isn't that funny how plants just want to grow? And we are lucky that's part of the joy of all of this, is that they really do want to grow. In the process of moving plants, I have ended up with the Calancho Mother of Thousands in every container. And you talk about want to grow. They don't care. They'll form a ground cover. They'll send up a stem. They'll make a shoot. And we've all got something like that. This is my current favorite weed, because a weed is any plant growing where you don't want it. And I don't really want it in all these containers, but it's fine. It makes a little bit of a ground cover in some of them, and that's good. But I've also noticed that they have invaded my night blooming cereus pots. So I was out there yesterday with a plastic fork, actually pulling them out of that, not transplanting them because I have thousands and don't need more. But I thought, well, now they're going to come up in the compost, and they probably will. So if you've got plants like that, appreciate them and enjoy them. You may as well. Now, I don't want to tell you this, but I'm going to tell you this. Last week, we didn't get to talk about bonobos. And I have just been, this is the thing that's called a pygmy chimpanzee, even though it's not. They are great apes. And you want to know how wild and wonderful this wacky world we live in is? We were talking about pangolins in the previous hour being more closely related. They, of course, are armored. They're called scaly anteaters. They're not anteaters, but they do have scales all over their entire bodies. Despite that, they are more closely related to mammals, to dogs and cats, than they are to anteaters and armadillos and things like that. The bonobos, at the other end of the scale in the great ape world, have 98 of the same DNA that you and I have. So we're not only pretty closely associated with bonobos, which might look a bit more like us, but also our friends the pangolins. Isn't that amazing? Nature's just amazing. I really love this. The only place that bonobos live in nature is the Democratic Republic of Congo in Africa. Most of them don't live there. They are endangered, and many more of them live in zoos and programs around the country. There are a few thousand, you know, maybe 5,000 left in the wild, and probably three times that many in places like Balboa Park in San Diego, or the Cincinnati Zoo, or most of the larger ones, because they do have to have room for a colony of them. The other thing about bonobos that's so cool is that they are extremely peaceful. They live a long time. They are they're the only of the great apes that are run in a matriarchy, that is to say, the women rule the world, you know, girls rule the world stuff. They're the ones that actually do that. And in fact, they are smaller than chimpanzees, with longer arms and pinker lips. So if you ever happen to run into them, you'll know which one is which. beautiful creatures, such expressive eyes. If you ever have the chance to look at the wildlife cameras from some of the zoos where they live, you would swear they're going to come up and start reading to you. You know, they just have, they're just so engaging and so delightful. And that's a, it's a, it's a bonobo kind of world that we just are living in it.
Well, and it, you know, the story of the Congo in that area is so interesting too, is, you know, it took so long to get in there as far as, you know, explorers, because it was so difficult to get up the river. You had the cataracts there, and basically you could get inland a ways, and then all of a sudden, you know, you had to trek everywhere, and you had to, they had to rebuild steamboats and everything as they went in. And I imagine
the diaries and journals and things amazing. From that exploration are just astounding.
They are. And then what they've uncovered, the things they saw, like the bonobo and the other animals that they had never seen before. It was just almost like this treasure trove of unique and unknown, you know, plants, animals, terrain. Obviously, that opened up, and I've done a lot of digging and research into that area just because I'm fascinated with, it was one of the last areas of the world that, that really got a full exploration other than places like the Arctic and the Antarctic. So it was one of those.
Or the Marianas Trench, my own personal favorite.
Yeah, that one's a little harder to get to even than the Congo was, I believe. But you were mentioning earlier about Australia only has one native insect, and that just, I didn't forget you said that.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Well, what is it? The mosquito?
Well, here's the deal. It's a midge. And midges, we have midges here. We do. But the thing that I'm so fascinated by in this particular piece of the work, you know, we talk about the microplastics. Everybody uses body washes. Everybody uses various and sundry laundry products and things that have microplastics in them. And we're aware that they do not go away. Okay? We spent 50, 100 years trying to figure out how to recycle plastics, and then we just decided we'd make them smaller. I don't know what that was all about in terms of, I recognize why they're useful, but the result of it is that now the only native insect to Australia is eating microplastics in the wild. This little teeny tiny midge, it's the size of a grain of rice. So you can imagine that the system it takes to make this creature exist is pretty intense. What they found is they're surviving the eating of the plastic unless they get too much, and then their body weight just stops. So clearly it's taking a whole lot of energy to digest these plastics. That's a problem. When we talk about things like the food chain and the basis of stuff, the midge is teeny tiny, but the midge is essential. It feeds other things. It has, you know, it has its own life that it has to go for. But the University of Kentucky, this is the part that I was really fascinated by. Why would the University of Kentucky be studying this? And I've not been able to find out why yet, but that's where the research comes from. The hidden energy costs of trying to get the midges to be able to survive consuming microplastics has got to have something to do with some creature here that I just haven't managed to put my hand on yet. But I didn't, first of all, the idea that there's only, I'm sorry, I said Australia, I meant Antarctica, the only native insect in Antarctica, which is even farther away, crazier. I'm sorry, I misspoke. But why would they be looking for that? Why would they be studying that? Well, we don't know. We're just going to have to find out. Anybody ever tell you that your brain's not fully formed until you're 30? Guess what? It's not formed then either. We've all heard that. We've all heard that. In fact, I was told once that I was about 45 when I was told that the reason that my truck insurance was so expensive is because guys in their 20s drove my same kind of truck, and their brains were not fully formed yet. Well, guess what? Neither are the people in their 30s. Nobody, the idea that your brain quits developing never did make any sense. But we stopped studying. We made our own definition by not studying the development of the brain past age 30. How we human beings fall over our feet sometimes.
We're good at it.
And I think in this particular case, this whole business of self-control and whether you act impulsively and how that affects the rest of your functioning in life. But the other thing that I learned from this, your brain prunes itself. The gray matter actually reduces itself when you're a teenager. So I'm looking for mine to get a little bit broader and bigger. What do you think? We'll talk about it. Stick around. We'll be right back.
You've been hiding out. I know that's true. Girlie, mom, sure need you. Girlie, mom, where you been so long?
For decades, Mississippi Land Bank has been rooted in relationships in North Mississippi, such as helping young farmers get started, like Watson Turnip Seed in Sumner.
My farming entity is Watson Planting Company, LLC. I started it in 2022 and had my first crop year shortly thereafter. I linked up with the Mississippi Land Bank for all of my operating loans. It's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
At Mississippi Land Bank, we're here to help you get started, too. Visit us at mslandbank.com.
The Mississippi Farm Bureau Health Plan is something my husband and I are grateful to have. Healthcare coverage costs have climbed, but Farm Bureau has a long history of stepping in when Mississippians need them. Since 1922, they have helped families get the coverage that protects what matters. And now they're doing it again with the Mississippi Farm Bureau Health Plan, affordable, dependable health coverage created for Mississippians. Built on the values we share, faith, family, and Farm Bureau. Strong roots, stronger health. Visit your local Farm Bureau office today and see how this plan can work for you.
When it comes to tree removal,
here comes the sun, I say it's all right.
In the Wayback Machine with our Beatles. I have to tell you, I old people do such funny stuff. Young people do too, but old people, we wander around. They say, oh, I couldn't sleep last night. I got all stuck looking at all this stuff. I couldn't sleep, and so I listened to some music, looked at some stuff. I ran into Paul Simon and George Harrison performing on Saturday Night Live in like 1902, you know, or something. And it was delightful. It was so funny to see people that didn't ever expect to be in the same place at the same time performing together. That's a lot of fun. Welcome back into the Garden Mama Show. Thank you so much for being here. I appreciate you very, very much. I am I'm tickled. I have a couple of questions for you, Lance. I got to tell you. How much do you like bananas?
I like to throw a little banana in there to make it have that real banana flavor.
See, get that pancake going a little bit, you know. Add that daiquiri.
I like to put a little banana in there. It gives it that real banana flavor.
That's what it does.
I love a banana. I love Laffy Taffy banana. I like Runtz, little banana.
I haven't thought about that in a long time.
Oh, man, I'll pick those things up in a heartbeat. And they're like Runtz that has the banana in it, you know, the hard crunchy.
I understand.
Yeah, I'll just take all the others and throw them away and just eat the bananas.
Eat the bananas?
Oh, yeah, those are the best.
Well, the University of Queensland has brought us some really, really good news. You know, this whole business, the devastating disease that has taken fusarium wilt into the world of banana culture, the Cavendishes all have it, and we've been working now probably 20 years trying to find a way around it to produce a banana that doesn't get it, or that a different banana that can be shipped as easily as it can or produced as easily, and none of it has worked well. The wild banana that they've discovered is not one that you would eat, but it does carry the resistance to the fusarium wilt, which is the problem. So now banana breeding, if you want to go into horticulture, this is the year to take up banana breeding if you're into the tropics. So go forward. In the next 10 years, you will find, either they'll find an answer or they won't, but the point is now we have something to work with. They've been studying this forever, trying to get to the point of what's causing it and then how to get around it. So trying to understand that genetic roadmap of getting the fusarium wilt in, fusarium preventer into the Cavendish, which is subject to it, is really powerful stuff. So I'm looking forward to the, I love when there's a hidden gene. You know, it really wasn't hidden. It's hidden because we didn't find it yet. So now we got it. So they're going to work on that. Speaking of working on that, we had good response to the first Flower Growers of Mississippi class in February. We will have another one in March. If you want to learn how to grow cut flowers with us, by all means, get in touch, mamaonair@yahoo.com, and I'll get you hooked up into our program. It's a great one, and I hope that you will. I hope you'll come along. If you by any chance did not get your newsletter, I get things that tell me the newsletters were returned, and then I hear from the people, and they say, no, I got it just fine. So I don't know what that means in terms of the email world. But if you didn't get it, let me know that also, and I'll be happy to send you another one. Now, he's going to think that I'm talking about men over a certain age, but I'm not, y'all. This is not about anyone we know. People are more nearsighted than they have ever been. Most of the time when you turn a certain age, you begin to not be able to see at a distance, or you begin to not be able to see up close. It depends on how your eyes are working. In my case, both of them got worse because they were already not that great. But when it comes down to it, we really do have a lot of things that we can work on. And I'm happy to say that there is a nearsightedness epidemic. Isn't that funny? People have been nearsighted forever. Why would there be more now? Well, a lot of people want to just immediately say, too much screen time. It's not that. They've done the research, folks. It's lower light indoors overall. Now, this work is coming to us from somebody that knows their stuff, the State University of New York College of Optometry. This is what they do, okay? Myopia is, of course, what the technical term for nearsightedness is. It means that your eyes do not focus at a distance. From the farther you get away from you, you can't see. All right? So it's not endless screen time. The new research suggests that it's actually more subtle. It isn't because we changed from incandescent to LED lights, but it is because we got more accustomed to a lower light level. And frankly, that's probably a good thing in most circumstances. We're not all doing surgery or sewing something that has to have bright, bright light. But if you live that way, it will increase the chances of myopia. Interesting. It does. Our pupils constrict in a way that reduces the light into the retina, and that of course can lead to the changes that cause nearsightedness. Who knew? Well, fortunately for us, the folks at the University, State University of New York College of Optometry decided they wanted to tell us about it. So I'm happy for that. One other of the plants that I did not talk about already today that are in Supertalk.tv in the collection, the very first of the blooming spireas. We talked about forsythia, we talked about quince, you know, we talked about these other shrubs. But when it comes to the spireas, there is a procession, and the very first one is the very thin-leafed, and it is. They're all called baby's breath and bridal wreath, and they kind of use the names interchangeably. But this one has the flowers all over the shrub, and they are small flowers, little bitty white flowers on lighter green leaves that are usually no more than a half an inch long. So it's a little bit different. Still looks like a spirea. But it will be the first one that comes into bloom, and it is blooming now. It's a beautiful plant, one that I'm really very, very crazy about. I don't think we use it enough. It's like flowering almond. We don't plant those two shrubs enough simply because I think they only bloom for a little bit of time, and we don't think about them. By the time we go to shop for shrubs, they're not on our minds. So that's part of that. The other thing about the bonobos, and I can't get off of this. I'm so tickled. Bonobos are able to play. We don't think about this. You know, we think about a cat playing with a feather, or you know, a dog chasing a frisbee, or any number of things like that. But when they put together an experiment that basically mimicked a tea party with children, and presented that to the bonobos, they engaged in pretend play in the same way that children do. You know, drink out of the coffee cup even though it's empty, that kind of stuff. Grab the plate. Those kinds of things. If you engage in pretense, of any sort like that, you're showing a different level of intelligence than the creature next to you that has no idea what you're doing or why. It's about your internal dialogue, your internal mind, and your ability to communicate with those around you. Because if you're going to have a tea party, you got to have one more than one bonobo, right? So I love this. The ability was really thought, we're so human-centric. We thought we were the only ones that can do this. Yeah, we used to think that we were the only ones that could use tools, too. Speak to the crows about that. The good news is that this was not just one set of experiments, but Johns Hopkins University has done a series of these, and in fact, I'm sure there's people getting their PhDs and writing fancy papers all about it, but it all comes down to cultivating the quality of imagination and trying to recognize it in the world around us. And in fact, the bonobos do it better than just about any other creature we have come upon. They in fact pretend juice, you know, and ate pretend grapes and shared them with each other and didn't just do it once. It's repeatable. It's a pretend game, just like a tea party that you might have with your dolls if you were a kid. Pretty fun stuff. I like it. And the videos are pretty fascinating, too. So, anyway, another one more thing going on this week, y'all, that I hope you're going to remember that this is FFA.org week. Get in touch with the folks at the FFA in your area if you haven't already done that. If you don't know about it, go learn about it. You need to know about these things. They exist. We talk all the time now about what we need to be teaching people, what kids need to learn. Do they need to learn to write cursive? Is it okay if they only know how to type? You know, all of those sorts of things. Yes, I recognize that cursive writing is sometimes, even as it exists now, if you go far enough back in history, it's kind of foreign. It's hard to read. But if you study it a little bit, you can. And then eventually you can learn to write it. So I think that those are some of the things that as we're teaching kids and learning how to do stuff, the more stuff we can do, as they say, IRL, in real life, the better off we are. We really do need to be able to put things into the kids' hands that we know about. And it might be something, for example, in the FFA world. It might be learning how to grow things. It might be learning how to get along with people, learning how to do a project together, learning how to find your role in a group. All of those things go on. If you're, whether you're growing in a greenhouse or growing in a field, you got to be doing something. And if you're doing something, you're going to be learning something. That's just the way that works. You've heard me say many times that I cannot cook with yeast. Yeast and I are not friends. The yeast laughs, you know, and runs the other way when I try to cook with it. But this, my friends, is real bread week. And that's going to involve yeast. Yep, it is. I don't know if I'll be brave enough, but I do have a recipe that I would like to try. Now, there's a couple of no-knead breads. I might try that. And then there's this very, very complicated one that does make the very best bread in the whole wide world. It's from the Tassajara Bread Book. And you may or may not even know what that is. But it's an old recipe for a whole grain bread. And it's funny because the people who put together our calendars are telling us that today is also grain-free day. How is that possible? How can it be real bread day and be grain-free? Anyway, somebody didn't look at the calendar. That's all I can say about that. I have been fascinated with the recovery and, in some cases, the lack of recovery of pansies. Mark was talking about it last week, and I was certainly watching around this week in my travels. There's some that I wish I could tell you that it was one variety or another. I don't know that it is. It looks as if it's just where they are and how they happen to be doing. It's funny. It's really funny. Some of them look like they froze and that they also may have actually flopped over, maybe got frozen or got wilted, but they've come back. Other ones are still flat as they were a couple of weeks ago. So y'all keep sending me those pictures, mamaonair@yahoo.com. We're doing the pansy survey, and I'm looking forward to finding out how they, you know, a month from now, how it all turns out. We'll be hoping that it can turn out better. That's for sure. Interestingly enough, I don't know what the answer is, but we're going to see. We're going to see. I've got so much in my head about trying to wait for spring and at the same time trying to go ahead and get busy. And I know everybody's got those same points of view. I've done a little bit of repotting. It's really time to start looking at the house plants that you've been enjoying all winter. See which ones are going to need a new container. Maybe they've grown their roots out the bottom. Some cases they may have even broken the pot. So it's time to be looking at those. If you're going to make a potting mix, take a tip from our correspondent today. Let me say this in a very polite way. Not every bagged potting mix is going to work for you. Now, in other words, if it's a moisture-holding potting mix and you're using it and then you're still watering, it is going to get too wet. It's also true that if you're using a moisture-holding potting mix and you think, well, I can put this out on the porch in the container and I won't have to water it, that's probably true. But if it's subject to rainfall, it still may get too wet. So be aware that you may want to use another organic matter to add to whatever the potting soil is that you're using. The differences between container bed soil, as we were talking about with our correspondent that's growing potatoes, the container soil itself is usually going to have a couple of different kinds of organic matter in it. And that there will be some others in the potting soil, but those potting soils are going to be probably more close to the same. They'll be more homogeneous, more about the same size particles. So it makes a difference in how you're looking at stuff and what you need for it. But you don't want them to stay too wet, and you don't want them to be able to get too wet. Okay? All right now. Oh, thank you, Lance. That's a good one. We'll be right back.
Knowing they're happy and they're safe. We would be so happy, you and me. No one there to tell us what to do. I'd like to be under the sea. In an octopus's garden with you.
Hello, I'm Sean Tindall, Commissioner of the Mississippi Department of Public Safety. Since 2021, Mississippi has seen a 25% reduction in fatalities involving crashes with commercial motor vehicles. Many of those crashes could have been avoided. DPS, through its MHP's Motor Carrier Unit and the Commercial Transportation Enforcement Division, is partnering with Big Rig Truckers to conduct safety checks across our state for the Trooper and Trucker Safety Initiative. The Department of Public Safety and the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration are working together to keep our highways safe for everyone. Thank you, and drive safely.
Got him. Took him out of my mom's purse.
No way. Let's do it. Gotta tie my shoe. Be right there.
Don't do it.
Whoa. You are?
I'm you many years from now.
Sure, old man.
Start smoking today and tomorrow you're hooked. You miss out on a scholarship, your girl leaves you, and you waste thousands on an addiction. It's not worth it. Not at all.
Okay, then.
What would you say to yourself the day you started smoking? Get free help at nevertoolatetoquit.com.
Nowadays.
Thank you, man. Appreciate that. I have 8 blueberry plants in full bloom. Uh-oh. Would it help to put a string of lights under the plants to help with the cold snap? It might. Making sure that the plants themselves are well hydrated and that the flowers are wet when it gets to be dark on the night that it's going to freeze, that will help, can help, may or may not help. And the third thing, of course, is to cover the whole business up, which is very difficult to do when you have a lot of plants. We usually hear about the notion of the string of lights around palm trees, and usually just to help keep, because the top's going to freeze, but to keep the trunk, you know, of something like a windmill palm, to keep that from being damaged. We hear about that all the time. Plus, it looks nice. But it's difficult. We do lose blueberries every few years. I mean, not the plants necessarily, but the crop itself. So I'm going to tell you that, yes, it couldn't hurt to put a light under there, but it also will help a lot to be sure that they're well hydrated. That's the bigger one, okay? Question about this whole business of these flowering trees, and what do we do about the shrubs, and why does that alarm go off 30 days after they're, you know, you have to say, don't prune anymore, you know, put up the X. Don't do that. Well, it's real simple. Nature takes its course. Your camellia finishes blooming today, drops that flower, and within a day or two, the plant itself has already reorganized its cellular structure to give it the opportunity to put on a bud for next year, which takes months and months and months and months and months. So when we have once blooming shrubs and trees like that, camellias, hollies, the red buds, the forsythias, and everybody, then we have to prune them within that 30 days if we want them to have time to put the buds on for the next year. And so that's the reason for that. That's how long it takes. They begin developing their buds within that month. And so if you don't prune, they can't develop the buds. Or if you wait too long to prune, you cut them off. So that's why we do that. It's very important. And it's also one of the things that you don't necessarily think of. Sometimes it's difficult to wait. There's a camellia in the garden here that's been in bloom for 2 months. And I can see that there are parts of it that need to, you know, some of the couple of flowers froze, and this, but it's continuing to put on more flowers as an old camellia will do. So that's taking me a little bit more time, but I'm looking forward to that. Yes, I will be doing giveaway seed packs. That's a good question. Yes, I will be doing those again this year. So they're not going to get mailed right away, but by all means, send me your info, mamaonair@yahoo.com, and I'll be happy to send you some seeds. Probably going to be zinnias, but I don't know. We're kind of in that sunflower world this year. I don't know what we're sending, but I'm always happy to do that. It's a lot of fun. Lots and lots of fun. Did we not know this already? Lance has cats. I have cats. Yeah. You probably have cats. Purrs are different from meows,
mm-hmm.
You know? And apparently this is a Berlin university that I can't pronounce the name of, that is letting us know that they managed to actually spend time and get enough people interested to study 1,000 cats. What?
Mm-hmm. That's like herding cats, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know if that meant that you had to write in or if they told you more, so I have no idea. But it turns out that, yes, the meow can be loud or soft. The meow can be because they're mad, or like the one that's outside my room now, howling because she's ready to come back in the house, or it just can be an annoyance. Whereas the purr is more likely to be something that you hear at a particular point. It might be because you're petting them, might be because they're content. It's different. It's expressive in a different way, as they say.
Oh yeah, mine are so unique in the way they communicate.
And, yeah,
you know what they want.
Each other yeah. Sometimes,
you
too.
Know, oh goodness, yeah.
Yeah.
Two big orange cats. It's always a nice little competition, especially for the right spot. You know
exactly. There's where am I going to sit? You know. We have cats on the outside of the house. We have cats on the inside of the house here, and so they holler at each other from time to time. From Paula and Tom and Brandon, 3-year-old cherry tree had black spot fungus the last 2 years. Is there something I can do now prior to starting to bloom? Yes. We met at the bottle walk. Well, that was fun. Maybe we'll see you at the art show in Ocean Springs. I hope so. That's wonderful. Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate that. Yes, there is. You can spray with oil. Get yourself refined horticulture oil, and that's going to help actually more than you might imagine. It doesn't solve the problem, but it cleans up whatever remains from the previous year. and that helps the tree get past it. That helps the tree start off more with a boost and not with a deficit as a result of having had that last year. Plus, of course, if you have not already, clean up all the way around the tree, and then as soon as that new growth comes on, you will want to use a fungicide spray to inoculate those leaves so that it doesn't get it again. That's not difficult to do. You spray maybe two or three times until the leaves are fully expanded. It doesn't stop it, but it will slow it down a great deal. It really does that. Would a tiller work better to break up the ground if I want to plant zinnias in a fence area? Well, I'm not going to dodge the question, but I will tell you, kind of depends on what the soil's like. If it's growing lawn grass all the way up to the fence, then you probably want to scrape the top off, you know, take off the top so that you're not trying to fight with the lawn grass. But it may be that it's well cultivated underneath there and you won't need to do any kind of tiller. On the other hand, if it's, you know, kind of ratty soil, I mean, I don't mean that in a pejorative way, but if it's stuff that hasn't been cultivated and there's nothing really growing there, you probably do want to till it up and add a few things to it. Zinnias don't need much, but they do need for the soil to drain a little bit and give you the opportunity to, you know, to do that. You know, it's not a fancy plant. When you want to grow zinnias and balsam and things like that that really don't need a great deal of attention or fertilizer, it's good to have a soil that works well to nurture their seeds, and then that's usually about all you have to worry with. I was looking at zinnias this week. Every year now we're introducing new zinnias, and I think that's fun. It's kind of like the sunflowers. The panoply of things that you can pick from are just huge. You make so many different choices, and that's just delightful. That's so much fun. Lance, I know you got your Girl Scout cookies.
I've already eaten two boxes.
Yeah. And the joke last week, y'all, after we got off the air, I'm going to share this with you. Paula sent us that we had written low fat on the cookies. Not that they were low fat.
Yeah, right.
But we have written low fat on the cookies. Just, there's so many of those. If you eat them standing up, there's no calories involved. You know, I mean, they're just silly things. But but we are going to enjoy our Girl Scout cookies one way or the other. So that's absolutely true. And I think I'm going to have to go out for some sticky buns now. Now that I know that that's the difference really is that the cinnamon rolls are frosted on top and the you have to flip over the sticky buns. I like that. I'm curious about that. I've never baked either one because, as we all know, I can't cook with yeast. Maybe I'm going to have to find out a way to do that. Maybe I need to meet somebody. There's always somebody else that can do something that you can't do, isn't there? You know that's true. Well, I hope that you have had as good a time today as we have had. Between pangolins and bonobos and breads and grains and, my goodness, blueberries. You know, this is another cold patch coming through. So protect what you need to. And beyond that, give yourself the opportunity to kick back and enjoy what could be the last of the really, really chilly weather. See, there's those low-fat thin mints. I'm telling you, I like it. See you next week.
Garden Mama anytime at mamaonair@yahoo.com. Thanks for choosing the Garden Mama Show.
Nowadays, customers are searching online for the services they need.
Are they looking at your business?
Having a mobile-friendly website can really help you win new customers. Let SuperTalk Mississippi Media create a great-looking and very affordable website for your business. Plus, studies suggest that a well-written radio ad can lead to a 20% lift in traffic to your website. Just call SuperTalk Mississippi Media today at 601-991-2305 or go to stmmdigital.com.
Thinking about that big home project? In Mississippi, the law requires a licensed contractor for residential projects, including new home construction over $50,000, home remodeling or improvements, including roofing over $10,000. All subcontractors performing residential, electrical, plumbing, or HVAC work on new home construction projects over $50,000 or home improvement projects over $10,000. Don't risk your investment. Visit msboc.us to verify a contractor's license today. A message from the Mississippi State Board of Contracts.
With the new IHOP.
Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.